mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, we'll tell you what condition our condition is in. Findlay Auditor Jim Stasiak will share some of the highlights from the city's condensed and simplified annual financial report, which was released last week. Also, pinching pennies made easy. Simple strategies from AARP's latest list of 99 great ways to save. And it's almost time to stuff the bus because we want to send every student back to school with everything they need to be successful in the classroom. We'll get details. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Tuesday, July 9th, 2024. Toasty yesterday. We didn't officially get to 90 degrees yesterday, but we were close. And I think I have figured out why it is that kids today don't spend as much time outdoors just playing in the summertime and all of that. We often lament the fact that kids are spending so much time on their screens, their computers and their phones, video games, whatever. And, you know, like when we were kids, we'd, you know, the summertime would come around and we would be up out of bed, out the door in the morning, and mom and dad wouldn't see us until nightfall. You know, just be home when the streetlights come on. And we'd be out riding our bikes and playing and, you know, whatever, all day long in the summertime. Kids just don't do that these days, and I think I know why. Yesterday, when I got done with the program, left the studio, went home, and I did not leave the house the rest of the day. I took the dog out a couple of times. Other than that, I just kind of hunkered down, because it was, and that's, I think, the problem with kids today, air conditioning. You know, when we were kids, I don't know about you, but when I was a kid, the house that I grew up in, we didn't have air conditioning. So it didn't really matter. It was hot indoors or outdoors, didn't really matter. So you may as well be outdoors. Today, we've got the air conditioning. Kids open up the door to go outside and play. It's, maybe not. That was me yesterday. Open up the door to go outside. Maybe not. It's a little toasty. Not as warm as it has been out west. Las Vegas has officially seen its hottest day ever. Ever. And mind you, you know, Las Vegas is actually in the desert. Sin City is in the desert. And is only inhabitable because of modern conveniences like air conditioning. But even for being in the desert, Las Vegas has officially seen its hottest day ever, 120 degrees on Sunday. The hottest temperature ever recorded in Sin City. 120 degrees. Previous record of 117 was hit 5 previous times, most recently in 2021. So there is no longer a tie for the hottest day ever in Las Vegas. 120 degrees on Sunday. Wow. That is the National Weather Service says dozens of daily record temperatures will be tied or broken across the West this week as temperatures hit into the 110s. Is that how you refer to that? The 110s? That just sounds wrong somehow. Anyway, that is hot. As a matter of fact, it is so hot in Las Vegas that I saw this story on the Newswire. Last month, nearly 24 people were actually hospitalized at University Medical Center in Las Vegas for pavement burns. Let me repeat that. Pavement burns. Nearly 24 people had to be taken to the hospital. For comparison, just 3 people were admitted to the Burn Care Center for pavement burns in June of last year. One of the patients, 59-year-old man, suffered burns to 7% of his body. He tells the Las Vegas Review-Journal that he passed out and fell onto the pavement and was actually burned for 7% of his body by the heat radiating off the pavement. Not just Sunday, the hottest day ever, but June, last month, the hottest June in recorded history in Las Vegas, with an average daily high temperature of 106.2 degrees. So it's not just yesterday, not just this week that has been very hot out west in Las Vegas. It has been a record setter all month long. Two dozen people hospitalized for pavement burns. Wow. See, this is why when my wife and I go to Vegas, and we've been several times, but we always go in the kind of the off season. We never go in the summer. You don't go to Vegas in the summer. This is not the time to go to Vegas. You go in like November, December, January, February. After that, you get to about March or so, it gets start to be unbearable. But you go in the off months, the late autumn and through the winter, it's actually very nice. And it's an escape from the snow here. So that's really, I think, the ideal time to be in Vegas. The pools aren't open. It's actually cool enough in Vegas that the pools aren't open. But, you know, other than that, it's actually pretty nice. Anyway, that is just amazing. Pavement burns. I've never heard that term before. Pavement burns. I mean, I guess it makes sense, but man. So this is a couple of work-related items. Among the first things you need to know this morning, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. Do you work for a demanding boss? How demanding is your boss? I guess we should start there. I mean, you know, like Steve Jobs, for example, was notorious for being a very demanding boss. Researchers from The Ohio State University have found that employees are more likely to tolerate a difficult boss if they are high achievers. If the employees are high achievers. Participants were asked to rank hostile behaviors at work, like ridiculing employees, giving workers the silent treatment, or taking credit for someone else's work. And when a boss was also a high performer, these behaviors were seen more as tough love than abusive. These bosses, according to the co-author of the study, Bennett Tepper, these bosses may treat employees harshly, but presumably their intent is to help their subordinates realize their full potential. That is the tough love part. However, overlooking these bad management behaviors could lead to a toxic work environment, but it is more likely that your tolerance level is directly correlated to how well the boss performs in his other duties, his or her other duties, how much you will put up with, or at least the perception of whether they are just trying to bring out the best of you or they're just a jerk. You know, that's the bottom line. It's kind of interesting. And speaking of, maybe these are, speaking of work, this another job-related story that I saw on the Newswire. These are the professions where you probably don't have to put up with an intolerable boss. I mean, there are some jobs where you really don't have much of a choice, and just suck it up and put up with an intolerable boss because you need the job. And knowing that you could be replaced fairly easily, but there are certain jobs where you cannot necessarily be replaced very easily. These are the least common jobs in the United States. The least common jobs, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, in the entire nation, in the entire United States, there are only 260 wood pattern makers. Wood pattern makers, only 260 of them. You would think that a job that hard to come by would pay very well, but the average salary is only $52,000. There are about 400 clock and timer precision technicians in the country. And it's like the next least common job. 460 farm labor contractors and 540 furnace and kiln repair technicians. Really? Some of those I would have guessed you know, like the farm labor contractors, the furnace repair technicians. I would have figured there were more than that, but I suppose so. They're like furnace repair technicians. Many people just replace an old furnace rather than repair it. But in any event, the highest paid least common jobs include prosthodontists, who make about $240,000 a year, and industrial psychologists, who earn an average of $154,380. So, good work if you can get it, but there aren't a whole lot of them in the country. I just thought that was kind of interesting. The least common jobs in the United States. And how about this, among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. These are tough times for a lot of folks. It's tough. Inflation making everything more expensive, squeezing budgets, all of that. Work issues maybe stressing you out. You know, again, if you're one of those least common jobs, you're probably less stressful, knowing that there are fewer people who could take your job. There just aren't that many of them out there. But again, if you're like most of us, maybe your job is stretching you out, money concerns, whatever it might happen to be. But according to a new study from the folks at WalletHub, you are most particularly feeling stressed, feeling, you know, overwhelmed if you live in Cleveland or Detroit. Those are number one and number two on the latest list of the most stressed cities in America. Cleveland is number one. Detroit is number two. Most stressed cities. Using data ranging from rates of alcoholism and unemployment to the number of hours people work and sleep, they even factored in homicide rates. These two cities top the chart of 182 the largest cities in the country as the most stressed in America, Cleveland and Detroit. Baltimore was a close third. By the way, that's the same top three from last year's list. Rounding out the top five, Memphis and Gulfport, Mississippi. Goes on to say here in the story, while Cleveland's metrics put it just ahead of the Motor City, it was very close and both had a lot in common. Cleveland has one of the lowest median household incomes after adjusting for the cost of living at just under $41,000 a year. Detroit's is $37,000, so very, very close. Cleveland has the second highest foreclosure rate and poverty rate, second only to Detroit's, both around 31.5%, give or take. 31.5%, wow. Both cities lead the nation in rates of violent crime and have high rates of unemployment. On the flip side, at the bottom of the list, the most stressed cities in America, and presumably the least stressed city on their list, Fremont, California, number 182, at the very bottom of the list, South Burlington, Vermont, and Fargo, North Dakota, the least stressed cities in America. So, Cleveland and Detroit at the top. You get a one-way ticket to Fargo, North Dakota, or South Burlington, Vermont, or Fremont, California. It'd be in much better shape. Yep, just kind of interesting there. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Tuesday morning started.
Is ONN. I'm Jay Fox on the Ohio News Network. The Cincinnati Inquirer reports that three of Cincinnati's five largest adult health care systems lost money in 2023. While hospitals typically operate on narrow margins, work shortages, the COVID-19 pandemic, and problems with insurance reimbursement appear to be the cause of the problem. UC Health, Bon Secours Mercy Health, and Christ Hospital are all in the red. TriHealth and St. Elizabeth both turned profit profits, with St. Elizabeth doing the best of the five. The fear is reduction of services provided and potential closures. The same issues plague major hospitals nationwide. A memorial service was held in Cleveland yesterday, honoring 27-year-old police officer Jameson Ritter, who was shot to death in the line of duty last week. Now Delonte Hardy, the suspect in the shooting, will likely face additional charges for a shooting involving his grandmother. Maureen Kyle of ONN affiliate WKYC-TV explains.
The suspect accused of killing Officer Ritter is expected to now face charges for the shooting death of his grandmother. 63-year-old Beatrice Porter of Garfield Heights has died. According to the medical examiner, Porter died on July 4th from her injuries. No word yet on charges against Hardy in that case.
In Hilliard, west of Columbus, police are responding to vandalism at a local pet store early this morning. A store window was broken and some animals may have escaped. Police are searching for a suspect. For the Ohio News Network, I'm Jay Fox.
So last week, Bentley Auditor Jim Stasiak presented to City Council the city's popular annual financial report. We say popular, it's not like Taylor Swift popular. This is accountant speak for a condensed, sort of simplified version of the annual financial report, which was out at the end of the year. You can read the full detailed financial report, but this is more in layman's terms, right? Well,
the full detailed one's much more fun to read. It's yeah, exciting and I'm gets sure. into the nitty gritty of all those statistical charts. And I know the whole community just waits for that to come out.
Every year on the edge of your seat. So the popular annual financial report is a much easier to grasp understanding of, you know, the basics of where we are and, you know, the financial situation of the city. And really, it's kind of interesting because if you look at the report, you can go as far into it, as deep into it as you want. But really, if you just go to like the first four or five pages, you get a pretty decent overview of, you know, where we are.
And that's exactly what it's intended for. It was interesting. Financial numbers should come from the finance office, and elected officials like to put out information and whatnot. And I've had requests for this type of thing over the years, but finally decided it's really time to get it out there for a couple reasons. One, and I think most significantly, this community is doing very well. We're very blessed here. Mm-hmm. And at this point in time, most people don't realize a lot of the wealth that the government is enjoying, your city, is one-time money. Mm-hmm. So if you look and dive into the figures like with the income tax, we see a huge amount of the increases over the last couple of years have been from the business side of it.
Right.
And, you know, we had some changes to a couple of our larger businesses in the community with the selling of Cooper to Goodyear and those types of things. And that had a major impact on our revenue. So your officials, your elected officials, we need to be, and I'm one of them, need to be held to a very high standard, a very high level of accountability. And the only way to do that is to make sure the community has access to good data that's understandable. And I think this report really did a nice job of bringing that forward.
So let's kind of talk about some of the highlights. And you mentioned the income, the revenue that the city of Findlay collects. What are some of the highlights here? Some of the things you mentioned, mm-hmm. you know, the corporate income tax.
Sure. Well, first and foremost, Findlay's living on a 1% income tax. That's special. That's something for us to brag about. You'll hear typical politicians in other communities and in other areas around the country say, well, it's only 1% and everybody else is too. Let's raise it. No. We've got a good situation. We've got a good budget. We've got sound finances. There are a group of people that want to see that number go up so that they have more resources to do more things through government. But that's not what Findlay's about. Findlay wants to protect that.
It's always a balancing act.
Absolutely.
Because you do have to have the revenue to maintain proper law enforcement and street, you know, maintenance and you know, all of those things.
When I came in 2011, we were in trouble. We didn't have any cash. You remember, we sat back then and talked, and look today. We're in a strong situation. We've shown that our numbers work and we're in balance, but that needs to be protected. And for example, this is a union negotiation year, so the administration's going to have to be cautious to follow the trends of what's going on out there, but at the same time, be realistic with the revenue we've had, and we've been able to do that. Other things, the projects we've worked on, the capital monies that come in, the grant monies, we've got phenomenal resources.
Yeah, you mentioned the resources that are essentially one-time monies. they are technically one time, but there seems to be a steady stream of those.
And I think that's a sign of the times. If you look at what happened in our community over the last 3 years, we had a number of things happen. Look, COVID, the federal government gave us $4 million. Then they gave us $2 million. You know, that's a lot of money for a community our size and that we received. And then with the windfalls from the changes in the business, and that brought in millions of dollars. You know, you could almost say tens of millions of dollars. I think we went from an average of $2 to $4 million in business tax to 8 and 13 over the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. That's unheard of. Now, we hope our businesses continue to be profitable. We're very proud of Marathon. We're very proud of now Goodyear and Whirlpool and the different businesses, Ball, in our community. I can't even name them all, but every one of them is important to us. Plus the mom and pops and the average size businesses in our community. But they need to continue to be strong, continue to be successful. And as long as we continue to foster that growth and the right types of jobs, not $17, $18 an hour jobs in this community, but $25, $35, $45 an hour jobs, we will continue to flourish.
Again, we've talked about that in an economic development perspective, and this is why those types of jobs are so important.
Oh, it's critical. It's called tiering. And I'm trying to get council and some of the other elected officials to understand, when you bring in high-tiered manufacturing, that causes the lower tiers, the trucking, the warehousing, the restaurants and things, to fill in the gaps below it. But you have to start at a high level where there is a high need for a lot of service businesses to serve that company that comes in. And we've got to look at it that way as we move forward. We need to be more attentive to that.
Rising tide lifting all boats, as they say. Turning to the expense side of things, one of the things that immediately jumped out at me, and we've talked about this in the past, is the fact that when you break it down by category, it's less than 1% of the expense of the city of Findlay is servicing debt, interest, and
thanks for bringing that up. That's one of my things I'm most proud of. When I came in, we had $50 million in debt. We're going to end this year with less than five. And that's not just because of me, but you know, to be able to reduce that cash flow, to have that low debt burden is huge for us. The other thing that's interesting, Chris, when it comes to the expenses, and I've noticed it's a trend as our younger adults are coming up, there is a major focus on recreation and services. There was a young lady that came to city council the other night and said all they care about is this park coming into the community. You know, we can't afford a $40 million park. We can certainly
About the Riverside.
Sure. We can certainly afford components of that.
Riverside Park, but the riverfront.
We can certainly afford components of that. But if you look at those expenses, and there's a beautiful graph in here that shows almost 50% of our expenses are for safety, the police. Fire, protecting our community, and we've got to continue that. And as people learn, my hope is that this document allows people, as they mature and come into the community, become active in the business community or in the government or in their volunteer organizations, that they recognize this city's primary job is to do its primary services, which are police, fire, water, sewer, and streets. That's our primary focus, and then recreation becomes ancillary to that, even though it's become important in our culture.
It's kind of interesting, and you talk about that that breakdown is nearly half falls into that category of security, and then general government represents about 29%. How does that compare to other cities our size?
You know, that's a tough question for me to answer because I don't analyze it that way. When I'm working with the numbers, I'm making sure that they're sustainable, that they balance, and that we're focused. If we're providing and serving this community and meeting the needs of our police department, that they have the resources, the officers they have, the fire department has the equipment and the ability to put out the fires that we have, if we're meeting those needs, then we're doing it right. The tendency in government is to say, hey, let's look down the road at a Westerville or a Dublin. People love to compare us to that if they want us to spend money. We can't do that because it's not apples to apples. Every community is different, just like every neighborhood is different.
The other thing that is interesting in that analysis, when you're about half of the city's expenditures go to security, those are really things that you can't cut. So when you're talking about holding
the line, or shouldn't cut,
right? Because we are talking about law enforcement and fire protection and
look at the special needs today. Today, our community, when you listen to people on the street, I have never heard so much concern about safety and security and the changes Absolutely. In our community as we evolve, over the, especially over the last five Right. years.
But the reason I mention that is because as you try and hold the line on spending to keep the income tax low and so on, to strike that balance, you have to keep expenses in check. But that's one of the areas that you really, I don't want to say it's untouchable, but it's close to being untouchable.
No, that's great. And again, you balance your priorities. You fund your needs first, mm-hmm. your wants second, and as part of that are your statutory requirements, whether it be a federal requirement or state requirement. But the blessing is it's working well for our community. It will continue to work well. And one of the tangential missions that I set for myself when I took office was I'm not just looking at this year, and I think you're familiar with some of the reports I put out, the mid-year reviews, and some of the things I do for council to keep them informed. Mm-hmm. One of my goals is if we look and we start to trend on our expenditures to a point where we're at risk of sacrificing our ability to provide those key services, then I'm going to yell from the rooftops. And I think Right. you've heard me holler things in the past.
Very true. So you look at that, you know, the next part of the report is comparing where we are now, both income and expense, to where we were 3 years ago.
Sure.
As kind of a benchmark. How would you analyze that? I mean, kind of break that down.
I think the biggest change in terms of looking at the past for today, I've never seen the availability of, let's call it free monies, grant monies, federal monies, come in ever. For this community. And mm-hmm. as we invest that money, we need to invest it in things that show us a return on that investment, that one-time money is used for one-time expenditures that doesn't create a significant increase in our operational costs from month to month or year to year. And that ultimately, again, that we're properly planning looking into the future. And I believe that today, as good as we are and as recognized as we are, our biggest strength is also our biggest weakness. We can't fall back on our haunches and let this continue to go. We need to be very intentional about the type of growth, the type of development, the redevelopment, and what we push for in this community so we continue to flourish.
So is that really the takeaway? Because, I mean, that was going to be my next question. When you look at all of this data and you kind of digest it, what is the big takeaway when you presented this to council, their meeting last week? What is the takeaway that you hope that the city leadership and the population takes from this?
My hope is that they recognize that we are blessed, but the blessings that we have and the monies that we have to be cared for. We have to be cautious. We have to be intentional about our planning. And again, as the culture changes, as the desire for more recreational facilities change, every bike path you put in, look at the asphalt that we've laid. A street is 60 foot wide. Now we've added another 8 to 10 foot of asphalt next to that. So we've added an additional 15 to 20% of maintenance cost long term on our most significant cost, which is asphalt and pavement and streets. And if you look at some of the communities, go, you know, I'm not going to name a community, but you've been in towns that once the streets go bad, they never get better. Mm-hmm. It's almost impossible to keep up. So again, it's great that these things are happening, and your elected officials need to be accountable to you in this community, and again, I'm one of them, so that we make sure whatever we spend that money on, we continue to care for this community so it continues to be the quality community it's always been.
The popular annual financial report is on the website, the auditor's section of the City of Findlay website, which we have linked up at our webpage, goodmornings.net, if you want to delve into the numbers. Again, the popular annual financial report is aimed at making this easy to understand, easy to digest. And
Chris, I appreciate what you do for the community, and thanks for having me in. And I always enjoy our conversations. You really do a great job for Findlay.
Thanks very much for the compliment. I appreciate it. Thanks for dropping by. We appreciate it. Of course, these days, saving a buck anywhere you can is more important than ever, and just so happens, the 15th edition of AARP Bulletin's 99 Great Ways to Save showcases an all-new collection of ideas to help consumers do just that. We are joined by Deputy Editor David Brindley, and David, worth pointing out that these are good tips for everyone, not just seniors.
Absolutely. Yes. Great. Thanks so much for having me.
So with summer here, this is big home improvement season, and you have some tips on saving money on what can sometimes be some rather expensive projects.
Absolutely. So now is a really busy time for contractors. So if you're looking to do a major home improvement project, you might want to consider waiting until winter. That's when contractors have a lot more time on their hands. They're looking for projects, and they're not only they'll give you their full attention, but you might just get a discount on the actual project cost itself.
Really easy way if it's something that you can put off. Yeah, it definitely could save some money that way. A lot of folks will try and buy things secondhand, whether that's from a secondhand shop or online. What are some of the types of things that will give you the most value buying used?
Of course, Chris. Yeah, we looked into this, and you know, summer, everyone's outside. I'm a big runner and a swimmer. I also like to bike, and so we found that you can get a big bang for your buck by buying used sporting equipment. I found a bike online that cost $650. Brand new, it costs $1,200. That's almost a 50% savings. Plus, look at cell phone. If you're looking for a new cell phone, if you don't need to have the latest and greatest, you can buy a used cell phone that's fully refurbished, fully functional, typically has a warranty in case something goes wrong, and it'll save you several hundred dollars at least.
You know, that's a really good way of saving a buck, but there is a perfect example of things that you have to be cognizant of where you're buying. Just buying one of those off of like Facebook Marketplace, you don't know what you're getting. You want to look for one that has been refurbished. It's been gone through. You know that it functions the way it's supposed to. Battery is good, so on and so forth.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Go through a major third party retailer is your best bet.
Speaking of which, online shopping is kind of the thing these days, and there are some places where you can get much better deals than others. Where do we get the best value there?
Yeah, so we looked into this, and we found that about 1 in 3 major retailers have an app that often offers extra discounts and benefits. So we recommend downloading those apps, putting them in a folder on your phone so you can find them very easily, and then check those before you do any online shopping for the latest discounts and just a great way to get more bang for your buck.
So what are some of the other personal finance, money-saving tips that you have featured in the bulletin?
Yeah, Chris, we have a whole section on personal finance. And one tip that we have that I don't see anywhere else is that if you're in a pinch, you can now tap your retirement savings accounts for an emergency. So you can take out up to $1,000 a year. And they even dropped the penalty. There used to be a penalty for 10% penalty for people who are 59 and a half years or younger. They've dropped that. So you can take out those $1,000, pay for those emergency expenses, and not have to take out a loan or put them on your credit card, and which has high interest rates. But you can also use those high interest rates and make those work for you. So if you have a savings account that's still at 1%, now's a great time to switch that to, say, 4 or 5% that banks are offering currently. And so, for example, if you invest $10,000 at a 5% rate, at the end of the year, you'll walk away with $500 as opposed to just $100 at 1%. So it's just a great way to make your money work harder for you.
Absolutely. Any other advice, any other thoughts on saving money at this time when money is so tight for so many people?
Yeah, we're all looking to save a buck. So here's a tip that's kind of strange, but it's true. We recommend don't shop for clothes when you're hungry. So it's not just grocery shopping you should avoid when you're starving. We all know that. But several studies have shown that hungry shoppers are more likely to make impulse buys on clothes as well. So before you start shopping online, have a snack or a meal and avoid those impulse buys, because every dollar not spent is a dollar saved.
I wonder if maybe that has to do with so many places that are those superstores now where you can get it all at the same same place. You're filling up your shopping cart with food and you just keep on going. You just can't stop. Maybe that
is exactly. Yeah. Those impulse buys.
Yeah. They'll get you into trouble every time. Deputy Editor David Brindley of AARP Bulletin with their 99 Great Ways to Save, which is out now, and you can find more of those on your website too, right?
Yes, exactly. All those tips and more are at aarp.org/99ways to save.
David, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Chris. It's been great talking with you. Take care.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
Sometimes you don't have to go very far to find the broken news. In this case, from Boardman, Ohio, which is in the Youngstown area, eastern Ohio, near the Pennsylvania border. Police in Boardman are investigating after responding to a report of an unidentified man relieving himself into a deli cooler containing approximately 65 deli sandwiches at a value of over $500. Relieved himself in the deli cooler. What would possess someone to do something like that? In broad daylight, no less. Eyewitnesses allege, and security camera footage seems to confirm, a 6-foot-tall white man weighing approximately 200 pounds, standing up from his electric shopping cart, leaning up against the cooler, and relieving himself. Police have filed a damaging and disorderly conduct report on the man whose identity and motive, at this point, remains a mystery. I'm assuming, yeah, they had to throw all of the sandwiches out. They're not going to sell those sandwiches, thank goodness, but what would possess someone to do something like that? I don't know. Elsewhere in the broken news, have you ever gotten so mad over the location of a bus stop that you took it out on the bus? In Boston, a man became so enraged that he could only board the bus at a designated spot that he smashed the front windshield of the bus with a glass jar. He was upset because the bus stop was not at a convenient location for him. He shattered the glass of the windshield, according to local news reports. The police report says they also discovered the man was in possession of controlled narcotics at the time. Oh, well, am I not surprised? They believe that may have contributed to his overreaction to learning that he could only board the bus at a designated bus stop. No injuries were reported. The man is facing charges. All right. Elsewhere in the broken news, from across the pond, do you remember the story of the woman in England who woke up last year, about a year ago, I guess this was in the broken news? She woke up one morning and had a Welsh accent just out of the blue. She woke up and she was speaking with a Welsh accent. She's not from Wales. She just had that accent. Well, finally now, after a little over a year, she finally has her real voice back. Zoe Coles was diagnosed with foreign accent syndrome, which apparently is a thing. They believe it may have been caused by a change in how the brain sends and receives information. Ms. Coles fears the Welsh accent might return one day. She said, "I thought with it being a year since my accent changed that maybe this would be permanent, but apparently not. Who knows what is going to happen next?" She has also suffered from memory problems and slurred speech, but she has a regular English accent back, as opposed to the Welsh accent that she was struggling with. It's all kinds of bizarre. Let's see. Elsewhere, also from merry old England, you see ATMs popping up all over the place these days, but you will have to be a good swimmer to access one of the newest ATM locations in Great Britain. It is located on the side of a bridge in Sonning-on-Thames, Berkshire. It's the side of the bridge along the river between two of the bridge's archways just above the waterline. They have installed an ATM. The machine actually is the work of an artist, an installation artist known as Impro, who created it as a protest against the widespread closing of area bank branches. His point is it's getting more and more difficult to access your money. So to prove the point, he put up an ATM. I don't know if it works or not. He put up an ATM on the side of the bridge you can only access from the water. It is just the latest of his stunts, which include installing a mailbox at the same location and a giant Google Maps pin at a local traffic circle. Okay. All kinds of things to keep themselves occupied in Great Britain. Did you hear about this story? I believe there's video of this that some of the passengers on this Ryanair flight posted online. A brawl between two families on this flight from Morocco to London. Happened on Wednesday. Flight departed from Morocco, destination London. But the fight caused the pilot to make an emergency landing about a half hour after takeoff. The dispute started when one man asked a female passenger to switch seats so that he could sit with his family. She refused because she was seated next to her own child, and her husband came to her defense. One of the families was part of a larger group, so other passengers in that group started to join in. And before you knew it, this was a huge brawl, according to one passenger. And then a lady in the row behind where all of this was going on started to have a panic attack because of the melee. Just adding to the confusion, she was screaming. There were kids crying. And at that point, they just said, we got to land. We got to do something about this. Once the flight landed in Marrakesh, police boarded the flight and took 9 passengers off the plane. So there was a show along with the flight. Didn't expect entertainment on this flight. And finally, in the broken news, now this just seems petty, to be honest. A Houston man has been charged with bigamy after his wife says she found out through social media that he was marrying someone else, even though he is still married to her. Police have actually located 2 marriage licenses for 53-year-old Marcus Shorten, but they can find no evidence that he actually divorced his first wife before marrying his second. Tammy, his first wife, says the couple split up in 2019 after 7 years of marriage, but they never officially divorced because he didn't want his family to think he was a failure. Well, now he's getting remarried, or he has gotten remarried, but he never officially divorced his first wife, and now she turned him in. That seems petty. I mean, they did break up. They broke up in 2019, and rather than just call her husband and say, hey, you remember, we never officially got divorced, and letting him sort the whole thing out, no, she turns him into authorities. Now he is facing a bigamy charge. Mr. Shorten, for his part, says when he was contacted by reporters, he says he was actually unaware of any charges that are pending, and he actually denied being married at the time that he got remarried. He is not yet under arrest, but if convicted, he could face up to 10 years in prison. I mean, come on. You know, just give him a chance to, you know, rather than, and that just seems petty. That just seems like, I mean, yeah, he technically violated the law, but just let him know and, you know, settle the whole thing quietly. Do you have to, you know, call police and get them involved and maybe send him to jail for 10 years? I mean, you were already split up. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Hey there, I'm Brad. I'm about to win the Tuesday Night Bowling League Championship.
Strike.
I'm also a highway worker for the Ohio Department of Transportation. When you move over and slow down, you're not only giving me room to work, you're making sure I can bowl the winning strike with my buddies.
Roadside workers have lives and families, but when they're on the job, they put it all on the line to protect and serve us. When you see flashing lights, remember, they're not just roadside workers. Thank you for moving over and slowing down.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. Over the past 3 years, coffee beans have gone up in price by 22%, and as a result, the average price of your morning cup of coffee has also gotten more expensive. And a new analysis of menus, restaurant menus across the country, calculate the average cost of a cup of coffee. Maine is the most affordable state for a morning cup of coffee, with the average cup costing just $2.60. South Dakota is the most expensive state, $3.79 on average. Ohio comes in closer to the more affordable side at $2.99 per cup of coffee. Now, those are the raw numbers. When it comes to affordability, meaning the cost of the average cup of coffee as compared to the average hourly wage in a state, Massachusetts becomes the most affordable state, and Mississippi is the least affordable. For example, in Mississippi, one cup of coffee will eat up just over 18% of your average hourly wage. So you got to work roughly 20 minutes every day just to pay for your morning cup of coffee, which is kind of interesting. Breaking it down city by city, I thought this was kind of interesting. Cincinnati is among the most expensive cities for a cup of coffee at $3.84 a cup on average, while Columbus is one of the least expensive cities in the country at $2.49. So everything you wanted to know about the cost of what you are actually spending your morning cup of coffee. You know, I've often said that it seems like once you get past the 4th of July, the rest of the summer just flies by. I mean, already, some of those summer sports camps for fall athletes are getting started, and marching band practice is going to get started here before too long, and things like that, getting ready for the fall school year. The annual sales tax holiday is coming up right around the corner, and it is almost time to stuff the bus, because we want to send every student back to school when the time comes with everything they need to be successful in the classroom. Tammy Stahl is with us from Christian Clearinghouse, who help us every year stuff the bus, and that's coming up right around the corner.
It is. It's going to be the end of the month out there at McDonald's at Tiffin Avenue, right. So the 25th to the 27th. Okay. And we've moved that back a little bit so you can get the sale prices on things. That's always a big deal, because a lot of times the stores didn't have things when we did it real early.
Yeah.
But last year we served over 1,300 children here in Hancock County. So that just tells you that the needs are many.
Yeah.
And we love this community because they are so supportive of us.
It is truly amazing every year to see how many school supplies are donated to the cause. Like you said, we helped 1,300 plus students last year. And it's also the monetary donations and all of that. So
right, and it's easy. If you can't make it out to the bus, you can drop things off in our office. We are working with Cedar Creek Church this year, which is taking over the Stonebridge Church location. So we're still going to have distribution at the same place. But we are still taking supplies. Of course, you can bring them to our office at any time if you can't make it out there. Mm-hmm. And we get that stuff out to the children. The other thing people ask is, what do you do with what's left over? And I'm like, what's left over? We never have anything left over. We're starting new every single year. And we just really, we get everything out to the schools if there are anything there things left. Mm-hmm. But we... just love this community and the support they provide.
So let's talk a little bit about the donations, first of all, so people can start planning for this. Like we said, before too long, you're going to see back-to-school sales. You got the sales tax holiday, all of those things. So when these things arrive, you want to pick up school supplies, not just for your own kids, or maybe you don't have kids anymore and want to help out those who are struggling with this. It's all manner of school supplies that are needed.
Absolutely. Backpacks are always the biggest need because those are a little more expensive and they're harder to come up with.
Right.
But we need everything from pencils and papers and crayons to flash drives and, you know, things that maybe people wouldn't think of that you need for school.
Right.
But we need, you know, the scissors and the markers and just all that good stuff.
Right.
So just... you know, pick it up or go on Amazon and have it sent to our office at the Family Center.
You could do that.
I mean, you can easily do that, and you don't even have to get out of your house. You can just hit some buttons on your phone.
You can do it all online. I was going to say, you can, you know, just go up and down the aisles of the back to school section at the store and pick up one of everything because
one of everything
is on the list is needed.
Yes, absolutely. So. Yeah, we just need it all. So we just really...
And then talk a little bit about because this is a big undertaking. Once you get all of these supplies, you know, what happens next? Kind of take us through this process.
Yeah, so we get the supplies, so then we have to pack up the backpack. So we have volunteers come out to the church, and we have a volunteer link on our website if you want to help with that, or you want to help us out at the bus. There's still some spots available there. So just go on to the Christian Clearinghouse website at cchsupport.org. And then once the backpacks are filled, they families do pre-register. That's going to start the 22nd of this month, that they can go on to our website and pre-register. And then we get those children taken care of.
So the way you do that with the registration, right, you know what school they will attend, so you can kind of
or at least which grade they're going to be in. Okay. So we have general idea of which grade they're going to be in. Okay. And we kind of look, we can't promise you're going to get everything from Stuff the Bus.
Okay.
But we're going to give you the basic things to get started.
That
you may have to fill in.
Yeah.
Yes, that match that grade level. So we go ahead and take care of those first students. And then there's some people that didn't know about registration or they forgot to register. Mm-hmm. They'll be able to come to our office right before school starts and pick up backpacks. So we want to make sure that every kid has what they need when they go to school, because it's not fun to go to school and not have what everybody else have and not have new. We want new items. That's really important.
Right.
We appreciate those crayons that maybe are in your closet that were only used once, but we really, really are trying to get the new items.
Yeah. So that's got to be just a tremendous undertaking to sort all of that out and, you know, separate it by grade level and what's appropriate for each student. And
then
and
packing
so
all those backpacks
up. Yeah.
And then people just drive through. The other thing that I want to mention is we do have the Project Happy Feet vouchers available again this year, and that is through the pre-registration process only starting on the 22nd. So make sure that you mark your calendars, put something into your phone. If your kids are going to need shoes, that's a $60 voucher this year to go to the shoe store to get your child a new pair of shoes that they get to pick out. So, again, it's a lot of hands, it's a lot of work, and volunteers are definitely needed, and supplies are definitely needed. So however you can support us, whatever you can do, we really, really appreciate it. And the kids and the families, really, really appreciate all we do.
Just to underscore how big of a deal this is, because I think on the surface, initially when people hear us talk about that, they think, well, I remember when my kids were in school, it wasn't that much money to send them back to school. I mean, you buy pencils, you buy crayons. I mean, how much does this really cost? But obviously, like everything else, prices are going up. And if you have, you know, more than one kid, you know, two or three kids are going back to school, that can be a big chunk of money.
It can be a big chunk of money. And, you know, you're looking probably at $80 for the backpacks and supplies, not including school supplies, not including the shoes and the clothes and all those things that go along with kids going back to school in the fall. So we are trying to help. And, you know, if you're out there kind of on the edge, should I register? Should I not register? We don't want going back to school to be a big financial strain on you. Mm-hmm. We want you to come in and get what this wonderful community supplies for you and get your kids the items that they need to make their school year start off with a bang.
Just making it a little bit easier on parents because, you know, you still have to, you know, shop for the clothes, the back to school clothes and get the haircuts and, you know, all of that. But if we can take care of the school supplies, we can take care of the shoes in many cases, then at least we've got they've got a leg up.
Right, absolutely. And if you're a business and you know want to set up a box at your office or a church, we love those when the community comes together. It just takes so many people to put this all together or take up a special collection at work or at your church. We take those proceeds and put them right back to the kiddos in this community. 100% goes right back to the kids.
That's important. It's, you know, everything gets right, cycled right back to the kids who are headed back to school. Now, we have a special section for Stuff the Bus on our webpage with more information on the types of school supplies that we need and all of the details that you're going to need. You also have information on your website.
Absolutely. Right? We have it on our website at cchsupport.org. So just click on that, take a look. If you have questions, give us a call at the office. If you decide you're going on to Amazon Prime Days next week and want to send it out to us, just look up our address. We're Suite 107 in the Family Center. So we would love to have anything that you can supply for us.
Very good. And again, the registration for the distribution begins on the 22nd.
On the 22nd.
And then the Stuff the Bus dates themselves are?
The 25th through the 27th at McDonald's on Tiffin Avenue.
And we will see you there. Again, Tammy Stahl with the Christian Clearinghouse with us this morning, helping us stuff the bus later this month to send the kids back with everything they need for a good school year. Tammy, thanks very much for dropping by.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. Our thanks to all of our guests for joining us on the program, of course. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about every day on the program at our webpage. Check us out online at goodmornings.net. You can also connect with us on social media. There's a link there to sign up for our daily email newsletter. You can shoot us an email if there's something you want to share directly. Again, goodmornings.net is our little corner of the World Wide Web. Until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.